Everybody, this is Mark Chaffardini. Welcome back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. It is fall. We're sipping on cider. Thank you for joining us. We are thrilled beyond belief to speak to our next guest. Brittany Allen is a very talented, multidisciplined, I would say fantastic five times in a row, but be true every single time I said it. But she takes energy and mood and spins it into something that you just got to hear it to believe it. So Brittany, thank you so much for being on the show. How's things in your world?
Things are great. I am currently engaging more with public life again, which is healthy. And I've got a really nice balance of both of the crafts that I do, both of the professions that I now have, which is I'm acting on a new Netflix show called Grendel, and I am also just about to start scoring a Blumhouse Epics film called Tattered Hearts for a good pal of mine who directed that. So, yeah, I'm making music, my own music, in the time that I have around that. So, yeah, life is pretty good right now.
Excellent. I think it might be kind of dumb to ask, but when do you sleep? How do you fit it all in? What is there any time in the day when you rest?
Definitely. Rest is really important to me. And especially since the pandemic, I tend to be a bit of a workaholic, I suppose. Another way to look at it is just that I love my work and I'm kind of obsessive. And once I get started on something, you know, it is really fulfilling to keep at it until I've made something that I'm really proud of. So, however, when, you know, mid-March hit last year and suddenly there was nothing on the horizon and, you know, I didn't feel like I had to be pushing as hard as I was, I felt like I allowed myself to rest for the first time in a very long time. And I didn't feel that kind of constant, like, you should be working in my voice. In fact, I heard, no, you should be slowing down. And I think I'm really making a concerted effort to hold on to that now that things are picking up again. So, you know, I yoga is a big part of what I do. Lately, I've just been doing yin yoga, which is like the most relaxing kind of like sleepy yoga you can do. I have a beautiful old dog who I take on walks throughout the day. Those are my moments of rest. And also the pandemic brought reading back into my life. So, you know, I've been working through one book now for a little bit too long because I'm not prioritizing making space for that lately, but I intend to keep that up too, because yeah, I think it's, I don't have like a massive social life. So that's probably, I'm able to balance things without kind of the demands of maybe somebody who's a bit more social than me.
Well, like you said, your inability to get through the book is not because it's probably not interesting. It's more of your professional lifestyle. So is the book something you want to shout out to? Do you want to?
It's so good. It's called Shuggy Bane. It's by Douglas Stewart. It's devastating. It's about a working class family in Scotland and a very, very, very alcoholic mother and her young son who is kind of discovering his sexuality. And anyways, it's a beautiful, very well-written book, but it's heavy too. So maybe that's why I'm taking.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot to unpack.
I've made an effort in the last, like I said, year and a half to do my best to finish the books that I start. But if I get to, you know, if I've made a concerted effort and I'm a couple hundred pages in and it's just not grabbing me yet, I also am okay to put it down because I don't need to prove that, you know, I'm smart to myself. I'll just read what I enjoy.
Books are great. So are films. Yeah. But let's just jump right into your music. I have to tell you off the bat, when your publicist sent me the pitch to speak to you, I knew nothing about you. And as soon as I got done with your most recent album, I wanted to know everything about you. So tell me everything, your dream. You have any dreams? Let's get to know Brittany on a DNA level. What got you into all your interests?
Well, I am a very, very, very creative person at my core. I think that's probably one of the most important things that I came into this life with. I was, you know, like there's videos of me at the age of 2, like singing and dancing. And at the age of 4, I begged my parents to convince the teacher at school that I could audition for the school talent show, even though I was in junior kindergarten and you weren't supposed to be allowed to do it until grade 1. So I really don't like that side of me, I guess, is still me. But I'm baffled when I kind of think back on that 4-year-old who had the audacity and the desire to get up on stage and perform. And I mean, that's, I've always been really driven, and I've had a like burning desire to be a part of making art that hopefully will touch people in some way. You know, I definitely have, I think I heard George Saunders, actually I was listening to a podcast with him. He's a writer and he's very well spoken, and he said like that he has a bit of a messiah complex, where I think the childish part of him wishes that his work could, you know, change the world kind of thing. And of course, you know, that's kind of been something I've had to shake, because that's definitely not necessarily possible. But if you can if you can affect a few or many people with your work, then that's important to me. So with acting, which is, I studied musical theater then in high school, college. I was singing my entire, you know, childhood. And then I also started acting professionally when I was 9 years old. And then in my 20s, I kind of like put music aside for a minute. It was very weird. I don't know exactly what happened. I think sometimes when you love something so much, you push it away from you. It's very scary, that love. And especially in musical theater and as a young actor in that, you know, I had a very hard time dealing with the rejection. It was devastating, earth shattering to me. And maybe I could handle the rejection a little bit better as a film and TV actress. So I went full steam ahead into that, and also just jobs were coming. But I really felt like, okay, this isn't filling me entirely, you know, throughout my 20s. It was you know, as an actor, you're like, you're lucky when you get a job and you just kind of take what you get for the most part within reason. And, you know, most of the time it's fun. And if you're lucky, it's a job you can sink your teeth into as an actor and give it your all on the day. But then, you know, 6 months to a year later, you see the project and you're like, oh, damn, I gave my all for that. At the end of the day, I don't really like how they executed it. I don't like how they edited it, you know, all these things. And I hated that feeling of powerlessness, and also just the reality of auditioning, which is so kind of, you're constantly putting yourself forward and you're just waiting for someone to give you the approval to work. So I was dissatisfied with that for a number of years. And I was also recording voice memos on my phone for years of musical ideas. Like every time something would happen to me in my life, I'd start singing a melody or a hook or some lyrics, and I'd record it. And you know, after years of doing that and having hundreds of voice memos, I was like, what am I doing this for? Like, what is my end goal with this? And then a number of things happened over the course of a summer about 5 years ago that led to me opening up GarageBand for the first time in many years. and having an epiphany where I realized, oh my God, I can, you know, every musical idea that I have, if I can learn these skills, I can execute them. And I also, at that time, I had been with my partner. His name's Colin Minahan. He's a filmmaker. We've made 3 movies together. We've been together for a couple of years, and I hadn't really shared with him my songwriting abilities, but I wrote a song on the spot one day in an art gallery, and he was like, wait, what? You just did that? And he was an incredibly huge reason as to why I started to go back into music, and why I was able to push through the self-doubt, because he was kind of the first person to go, you're really good at this, you need to do this, and I'm not gonna let you give up on yourself. So anyways, that's, I don't know, I could go on, but that was kind of the turning point for me. And I guess I'll go on just a little bit further, which is that then I wrote a tremendous amount of songs over the course of a couple of years. I started to really dive into music production, worked with a couple of mixers, like hired a couple of people to come in and mix my work. Every time I was happy with how they got it to sound technically, but very disappointed with the way that the heart was lost and the essence of what I heard was no longer there. So I also reached a moment where I was like, well, shit, I guess I have to learn how to do this too. I have to learn how to mix so that I can fully articulate my ideas. And it was years of YouTube and Googling and late nights where my brain was so overwhelmed with the information I was receiving that I would pass out at the computer. I would just like fall asleep while I was talking to someone. I'd be trying to convey what I was learning, and I'd just fall asleep because my brain was like, I can't do this. But then doing it enough times, you do figure it out. And then cut to a few years in, Colin and I were making our 3rd movie together, which was called What Keeps You Alive. And we kind of just threw out the idea of like, why don't I try to score it? You know, I'm deep into music now. Why don't I try? And I tried to score a couple scenes. And that too was another real epiphany moment of, oh my God, it feels incredibly natural to me, you know. My whole upbringing in musical theater seems to kind of just be coming into this now, and my understanding of the genre of horror, you know, watching Colin edit a couple of films, I know story better, all of these things. Now it's like, you know, a far bigger part of my life than acting is, and I'm so grateful for it, because it's I feel like I have a lot more autonomy over it. And That's where I'm at right now. And I just feel endless possibilities within it. And, I think the biggest thing, something that I've kind of learned as things have been picking up as a composer, is that, holy shit, if you really set your mind to something and you work your ass off and you, you know, work through your fears, you can really surprise yourself, and you can achieve things that you never thought were possible. So I'm now kind of like, thinking about other areas of my life that I'd like to do that in.
Well, you've proven you can apply yourself.
Yeah.
It's really good to have that support from Colin so close to home, because that's a lot different, say, from, say, a coworker or an uncle or just somebody. But I could just tell the joy that you get speaking about that and the exuberance. I mean, it's clear that you're in a place where you should be if it makes you that happy. So congratulations on that aspect.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you said something earlier that made me think that, there's always self-doubt, no matter what you do, you always kind of face imposter syndrome or the inability to break a barrier, but it's kind of weird. I think that maybe when you love something, it is intimidating, to the point where if you came at it as maybe an amateur, or if you were just going to go play horseshoes in the backyard at a barbecue, you get a ringer and then you don't think anything of it. But if that was your living,
yeah,
that's got to be almost paralyzing to some people. So,
Yeah. I mean, I think so. And I think we all have, you know, for whatever reason, I think so many of us have a hard time really going after what we want. I think it's something that's, you know, I just don't think our society and our education system is built to see people as individuals and really help them cultivate what makes them unique and give them the courage and support to pursue that. So I think there's a sense of, oh, that's for other people. And I think I felt that, you know, I had friends who, and maybe this, whether this was society or just my own insecurities, you know, I had friends who went to school for jazz music, or who at a very young age knew, oh, I want to be a singer-songwriter. And they were writing tons of songs. And I looked to them when I was younger and I thought, okay, they're the real musicians. Like, I'm an actor. That's not for me. Like, I'm not good enough is what I thought, you know? And I guess I don't take it seriously enough because I'm not writing as much as them. And I'm not, you know, all of these things that actually all I had to do was just start writing more. And then I go, oh, okay, actually, no, I'm really good. And the more I write, the more I want to write. Yeah, but you know, we let these stories repeat over and over in our head to the point where we believe them. And most of the time, you know, they're stories that are kind of beating us down, unfortunately. So I still have those with different things. Yeah, I think, you know, therapy really helped working through a lot of it too, to be honest. Therapy is great.
Well, you know, when you look at somebody's personal life and you look at their professional life, you know, I talked to composer Henry Jackman a number of years ago, yeah. or a number of times over the years. And one of the things I asked him, I said, what do you do when you're off the clock? Do you listen to your music? And he goes, no, I'd never listen to my music because I would pick it apart. But he says his way to relax is he goes spearfishing in the Cook Islands. Now, I know everybody's got a hobby, but what do you do to separate work Brit from play Brit? And what do you like to play? Or what do you do when you play?
I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I love nature. Right now, like I said, I'm in British Columbia and I just went to Tofino for the first time, which is on Vancouver Island. Also went to Salt Spring Island, which is a small one of the Gulf Islands, and it's just phenomenal. And being in BC, just even where I'm at right now, you can kind of see the mountains wherever you are in the city. And being around nature and just kind of like marveling at its beauty and magic is the best thing for me to you know, have perspective on the greater things that are happening in this life and in this universe, and it allows me to, like, you know, not be constantly thinking about, yeah, my career. But actually it's interesting. I mean, truthfully, I do listen to my music every now and then, and I don't pick it apart. I'm, you know, maybe because I don't know, I'm still in awe of like what can be done with music, and I'm also still kind of occasionally surprised by the fact that I do this now, that sometimes if I'm feeling doubt, I will actually listen to my music and go, oh my god, like, oh okay, I'm on the right track, I'm gonna keep going, like I like this, you know. Yeah, but yeah, no, I mean, having space from it all is very, very important. But for me, it's like walks with my dog and going to the ocean, or going to a forest, those things. And it's cool you say spearfishing, because I'm determined actually to learn scuba diving.
I know everybody works differently. You know, someone could work, you know, an author may have a quota of once I reach 500 words, I'm done for the day, or somebody may, you know, just work until they pass out. But when you come up with your material, do you find yourself more productive in a crunch mode where you're just sort of banging on keys until you nail something? Or is it the yin yoga or walking with your dog through the woods?
It's a combination. I do really well with deadlines. You know, now that I've scored a couple of seasons of a TV show, and I did an episode of American Horror Stories this summer, you know, both of which have very demanding deadlines and quick turnarounds. When I scored my first season of the show a year ago, it was definitely like, oh my god, how will I make this amount of music in 7 days. You know, prior to then, I'd scored a number of futures and I'd had a few months. It was very leisurely, lots of experimenting, lots of, yeah, you know, working for a good number of hours and then going for a walk and having, you know, some realization that I could then come back and bring to the work. But on a TV show deadline, you don't really have that. Like, I still think it's important to take the moments away, even if it's just 10 minutes of, you know, yoga in the morning, a break at lunch, whatever. But yeah, when you're on a TV show deadline, you are working many, many hours of the day. But it's purposeful and it's, you know, it shows me how quickly I can work when I have a deadline. So actually the trick with my original music, with my, like my pop music, is to create deadlines for myself. That's something I struggle with a little bit, because I can sit with the same song for months. Whereas if I had a deadline, you know, I could finish it in 2 days. So I'm getting a bit better at it, you know, now that my schedule is just getting a little bit busier and I don't have all the time in the world. I recognize that, okay, if I can't take forever on this song, like I only have a limited number of days before this other thing's going to pick up. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, in one of our last episodes, I was speaking to Marco Beltrami and he told me something, quite eye-opening. He said that when you write music for film or a medium, it's not pure music, because your contribution is a part of something, like a cog in a watch. So when you are doing something for your own, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that you get to probably channel yourself into it better, or find a musical pathway that aligns more with your personality. So what I love about your recent album is the sort of energy, poppy, but dark and moody, but it's very poetic. So how much of that is coming from your heart, or how much is it, you know, maybe influence from somebody or emulating? I don't know. If that's not too confusing a question, how does that come out to what I hear on the record?
Yeah, I mean, I think my original songs are deeply personal, and yeah, when I'm writing them, it's maybe one of the purest forms of creating. It's just fully about capturing whatever I'm feeling and letting my instincts tell me how to, you know, make that into a song. And I think especially now, as I am working on a new album right now, I am removing any limitations that I might have had previously. I think, you know, for my first album, I really was going into the pop song and you know, following slightly more traditional structures, like song structure. And now that I've, you know, been working as a composer for a couple of years and I'm honing in on my voice in that, I want to bring some of that into my pop music. So I feel even less bound to any way of telling a story. And also I think it's just like getting older and realizing, like, you know, I'm not trying to be like a little pop star. I'm trying to make music that just moves me and I hopefully moves other people. So yeah, it's just like what makes me feel the most. And you know, I mean, I have been pretty fortunate with the projects I've worked on as a composer to not feel like my voice is being, you know, something that I kind of realized just this summer, actually working on American Horror Stories. That was a big step for me in my career. And, you know, with every big step comes like new doubts and new kind of like questioning of your ability, I think. And I think, you know, it took me a moment to kind of go, oh, wait a minute, they hired me because of my voice. Like, I don't need to try to rework my voice for them, because the reason I'm hired was because of my previous material that is me. So to actually lean into that and trust that you know, that will be what is the most effective. And I think that's true for every art form. You know, it's even as an actor too, sometimes, you know, you kind of can get in your own way and you think, oh, I should be like conforming to some other, you know, version of myself that's more muted or more this in order to like please what I think people are after. But actually, you know, the best work comes from when it is from the heart and it's really you know, your voice, your essence, that will be the most effective. So it's like, even though you know that you want to do a good job for the people who have hired you and you want to like, you know, put your best work out there, you can't really like focus on pleasing them. You have to kind of quiet them out and trust that if you just connect to the deepest part of yourself and how that self relates to the material that you're scoring, you will do something that is great. So, you know, it is a similar process for scoring, but yeah, at the end of the day, scoring is someone else's story. It's someone else's story. You're servicing someone else's story. So the pop music is purely my voice. And that's why it's the scariest for me too, you know, cause there's nothing you can hide behind. It's your thoughts, your feelings, your take on the world.
Well, you know, I think that, listening to, I think Burning Witch Records, is that who put out
Burning Witch's Records? Yeah.
Okay. And then I think Mondo Records, or they did a variant or an exclusive release that came with a 7-inch release.
Yeah.
What was on the 7-inch? Because I didn't get that.
Okay, cool. So the 7-inch had the first single that I released a few years ago now. It's called The Impossible. It was a song that was made in GarageBand, started out with just, you know, the loops, the standard loops of GarageBand. I think that was something that I used to work a lot with when I was first starting, because I was less skilled at programming my own rhythm section, et cetera. So just to kind of like spark ideas, I would grab loops and also actually that song, there's kind of like a spoken word rap element to it that came from a poem that like a couple years prior I'd gone to some random like dinner where the host had said, okay, bring something to share, like bring something, some piece of art or something to share. And I had read a really sad article earlier that day. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly the subject matter, other than that it was looking at the discrepant poor, and it really kind of just like gutted me and you know, society's lack of empathy for the poor was particularly what struck me about the article. And so I wrote a poem about it. It was pretty dark, and it was about like a it was just about like an oblivious kind of entitled person who is willing to go through life like not looking at any of the darkness that's around them and not seeing any of it as their responsibility or their you know, or as an opportunity to step in and help or do something about it. So yeah, that poem then you know, a couple years later when I was writing the song, I was like, I feel like this, it's working with the lyric ideas that are coming to me. So yeah, it's like a really angry pop song. And that's kind of like, I think that's where I like music that is accessible. You know, I like melody. I love hooks that you sing along to. I like to be swept up in the emotion of something, but I like to dance. But then I also, you know, have a pretty critical eye of our society and of humanity, and I have a lot of anger towards you know, the situation that we found ourselves in as a species, and so I I channel a lot of that into my music, and I kind of like to have like, yeah, this undercurrent of rage in a very palatable pop song.
Well, I think the whole album comes across that way. Now, I've been dancing around saying the actual name of the album because I can't say it. Would you please tell us how you pronounce?
Oh, sure. It's Kamai Lion.
Kamai Lion. Okay.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it's another way to say chameleon. And ooh, that just felt right to me because I think that's kind of what I'm realizing I am. And I just liked the lion, you know, like the lion was a powerful, that felt right too, but come on, I was looking up, I guess, alternatives for chameleon, and that's how I stumbled upon that.
Well, that makes me feel so much better. Thank you for explaining it. And also yes, that's a badass mindset. So my favorite tracks, I'm just going to jump into it, yeah, are The Depths and Goodbye. Now, I think that you have just this such a unique voice. I think it's the unofficial album of the fall. Feels perfect to listen to. It's like you combine the poetry of Sarah McLachlan with the attitude and the style of Prince, and it's just like every hit, except for The Hills, every just track is, you know, it's on loop in my head. So I want to thank you for making that, and I'm thrilled to be speaking to you about it. So what are your favorites?
You know, it depends on the day. I think that Goodbye is a really successful song. It's got a great arc. I also, you know, those songs were released over a period of a couple years, and now Burning Witches has like compiled them, and there's a few songs that have not been out in the world that are on the vinyl. But so I actually, you know, kind of worked on each of them at various stages of my own development as a songwriter and as a producer and mixer. So I would say that like when I listen to Goodbye, it feels like the most kind of I don't hear the flaws in it. I think it's I've really kind of figured out how to mix and produce and create an arc that, and the vocals sound great, you know. So that I listen to that song, I'm like, yeah, that you did it with that one. But all of them move me in different ways. Yeah, I love The Depths. I think, I mean, there's something about kind of The Depths was a slightly older song that went through a couple different incarnations. I'm trying to think. Yeah, okay. I can't really remember now when I first wrote it, but it was an earlier track, and I think there's something kind of like really raw about some of my earlier tracks that, you know, I didn't know the proper way to do things, and so for that reason something unique came from it. And I love yeah, I feel like a lot of songs now in pop, like it's you're losing listener, like, you know, people have short attention spans, so you know the hook comes right away and then the hook comes again, and then it's like quick little verses just to get back to the hook, and it's just super condensed, you know, tight version of the idea, whereas I really like songs to take a journey, and so sometimes it's not until like the last third of or last quarter of my songs that I think you go, oh shit, this is where it's been getting to. But it needed, in my opinion, to kind of take a slightly slower, unpredictable route to get there for that to really be satisfying. So I think The Depths does that well. And yeah, but then, you know, I can dance to So Fucking Alone or Losing My Mind, and Looking for Another's, you know, just a nice chill vibe, as is The Hills. Yeah, I like them all, but it's hard to, it's like you got, I have to kind of like find myself listening to it. If you know what I mean? When you've listened to something and you've worked on something so much, it's sometimes hard to appreciate it. So when you have distance though, and maybe it randomly comes on a playlist or something, I'll be like, oh, cool. Neat. I like this. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. There's a line in Goodbye where you say you're much lighter because you threw all your bags on me. And it just, that's like one small taste of what you get in Kamai Lion,
yeah.
Chameleon. And I like listening because it feels like a different experience every time I listen to it. And that's because I believe the songs are structured in a way that it's not like, you know, House of the Rising Sun, where it's like, duh, 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 it follows a certain cadence. You pick up the pace, you slow down the pace in the same song, and you put on some kind of vocalizer that makes you sound like a robot or a guy. Yeah. It just changes your dynamics. So that's what I find attractive and interesting about each of the tracks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that Goodbye was definitely about a really, that might even be one of my most kind of revealing tracks, because I think some of the other songs lyrically, I, you know, maybe slightly hide behind the poetry and the metaphor and stuff, but Goodbye is like, it's very clear what I'm talking about. And that was a, you know, that was a very real situation in my life that I was, had many, many, many feelings about. And even when I listen to the song, I go through the journey of that friendship. And I actually find myself in the verses and the choruses, you know, feeling the pain and the loss of that friendship and going, wait a minute, shit, why did I say goodbye? But then by the end of it, you know, I give all the reasons as to why I had to say goodbye. And then I'm deeply empowered by it, you know, and every time I listen to that song, I go, by the end, I'm like, no, I made the right choice. Cause you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm saying goodbye. Yeah. But it's complex.
I, as most personal stories are. So yeah. Thank Brittany for sharing. Thank you, Brittany. But when I get to the end of it, when it transitions to the hills, it makes me feel like I'm at the end of a movie where you don't want to let go of the characters. Like when I was a kid, I'd watch The Wizard endlessly. I know it's not a great movie, but there's something when they drive away in the truck and I'm going, take me with you. Yeah. Or even like Big Trouble, Little China. You just don't want to let go, but sometimes you gotta.
Yeah. Nice feeling.
So,
thanks.
So I know that acting is something you're trying to not overcome. That's the wrong word for it, but you've just found your purpose. But there's got to be some good things. Do you have any great acting stories, friends you've made, like, you know, set behind the scenes, something?
Sure. I mean, well, I'll just say that actually, you know, my transition to music came from a place of feeling like, okay, acting's not enough. I need more. And throughout the last 5 years or so, it's, you know, I've upheld my commitment in just enough to acting to, like, you know, still be in the running for certain things. But you know, most of my energy has been music focused. However, I, you know, for years, I denied myself music because I was like, oh, I'm only allowed to do one thing. Like, you have to be a master of only one trade, you know, otherwise people maybe won't take you seriously or whatever. I was worried about, you know, spreading myself too thin. And so I denied music from my life. And you know, in start building my career now in music, I was doing the same thing in my outlook to acting, where I was kind of going, oh, I can't wait until I'm making, you know, music and I don't need acting at all. I don't have to audition ever again. Kind of like looking forward to that day. But I kind of in the last handful of months have realized, oh no. I'm somebody who needs a balance. And, you know, I can't deny the part of me that loves acting. I can't deny that, the part of me when I'm in a scene and when I'm embodying a character that, you know, I resonate with, that I empathize with, I'm deeply in my purpose. And it's another like kind of gift, I think, that this body was given that I should like share in some way. So, yeah. So actually, like, as soon as I kind of was like, oh, I, you know, I'm gonna let go of kind of this old school way of looking at things where like you can only be one thing, and I'm just gonna be who I want to be, and, you know, make art in every way that I can. And actually, I'm not gonna stop with music. Like, I see that eventually I'll teach myself something else and incorporate that. So that being said, then, you know, I was super fortunate that this acting job kind of came in right when I had that heart opening to it again. And it's a super fun show. It's called Grendel. I've got a nice, complex character that I'm playing, who, you know, I really like characters that are, well, I'm probably not supposed to say anything more about it than that. So maybe I'll jump to another project, but I guess most recently what some people might have seen me on is I played the role of Popclaw in The Boys. Have you seen that show?
I have not.
Oh, sorry. Okay. It's quite all right, but it's a good show regardless of my involvement. So you might want to see it, but yeah, that was a really fun character. She was so broken and flawed and funny, and you know, I really like roles that are just trying, like they have maybe kind of good intentions, but they were raised in a way that like their good intentions always come across as bad, and they don't know, they desperately like need something, but everything they do, they go about it in the wrong way. And they're kind of just these like sad, tragic characters. But they have like, you know, deep down, you really root for them because you feel for them. And so those, like, that's my favorite kind of role in Popclaw was definitely that. I don't know if there's any other, I mean, other stories to tell as an actor. I'm not so sure. I would say What Keeps You Alive is another film that I'm deeply proud of my work on, that was the third film that Colin and I made together, and we made it for $200,000 Canadian, which is, you know, kind of insane for a feature film. We had a very like small, incredibly small crew of people. We shot it, parts of it on the property that my parents' cottage is on. We also were lucky enough to find this incredible old cottage up in Muskoka, which is in Ontario, Canada. And I starred in it alongside Hannah Emily Anderson. And then I also scored it. And then the film, you know, had such like kind of modest beginnings, but it ended up like a New York Times critics pick and one of Rolling Stone's top 10 horror films. So that was an incredible journey for us to kind of have our movie like cut through in a way like that.
That's fantastic. That is swinging for the fences in its most encapsulated form. It seems like everything you touch turns to musical or acting mode. So
I mean, not necessarily. It's, you know, I put my best foot forward in everything I do. And so the work itself might be, you know, hopefully something I'm really proud of, but you know, it's you very much appreciate when it does cut through or when you are seen. And I have been in the business long, lows and the highs, to know that, you know, when the highs come along, you're very lucky, because it's just a lot of it is luck, luck and hard work.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're about out of time, but I think we want to round this wonderfully informative interview, round it out with some fun questions. Now, these are multiple choice. It'll help you along the way, but these are music related. So,
Oh God, like music knowledge related? Music trivia?
This is more, I'd say, all of these people are household names. It's not like I'm going to ask you to tell us Ravel's third album or something like that, which I don't all know. Right. You may know. All right. So, a lot of people in the industry, as you were saying, have different backgrounds and passions and stuff. And sometimes you just need to grab hold of what is really truly your calling. So there are directors and composers out there who score their own films. So I'm going to list three directors and you tell me which one is a director and the composer.
Okay.
So the first one is A, Wes Anderson, B, John Carpenter, or C, Matthew Vaughn.
Okay. John Carpenter.
B. If I had a sound clip for ding, 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 that's the right answer. Way to go. So moving on to question two. This composer is also a film editor. Could it be A, John Murphy, B, John Powell, or C, John Ottman?
Oh, God. This is just a guess. Let's go with C, John Ottman.
Ooh, two for two. Yes.
Oh gosh. Okay. That was luck.
He's the composer of The Usual Suspects. He's also scored a couple Bryan Singer films, but he also finds himself editing Bryan Singer films. So
very cool.
Nice little duality.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a similar mindset in some ways, you know. Actually, like, I love when an editor has a musical or rhythmic sense in their editing. You know, when they don't, it can be kind of painful. But a good editor, I think, you know, whether or not they're conscious of it, which I imagine they are, you know, is considering the rhythm of the dialogue and of the cut. And that can be such a helpful thing as a composer, because you come into it and you're just kind of, you're hearing the beat of it. You're hearing the tempo just by the way that it's been cut. So that makes sense that somebody would be able to do both potentially.
Well, excellent. Well, you are two for two. We have two more questions. I know you can do it. You've got something in you that's going to get you 4 out of 4. So the next question is, this personality is an actor who turned into a composer. Is it A, Amelia Warner, B, Wendy Carlos, or C, John Cena?
A, Amelia Warner.
Ooh, you are too good for this game. Yes, Amelia Warner, yeah. Much like you, did not care too much for acting and said, I've got something in my heart and I need to put it on the keyboard. So
yeah, very cool. Yeah, she's great.
Well, the last one, this might be the easiest one. So, but I'll see what you got in that temple of yours.
Okay.
Movie stars. It's no news that movie stars are musicians like Keanu Reeves and Johnny Depp and Kevin Bacon. But these actors had a musical career before they got into acting. Actually, I take that back. They just, at some point in time, have a musical career. So okay. Is it A, Jamie Foxx, B, Kevin Costner, or C, Ryan Gosling, or D, all of the above?
Oh, God. Oh, all of the above. Oh, God. Shit, you threw that D in there, and now I'm doubting. Ryan Gosling. I don't think Ryan Gosling had a musical career. I know him from Breaker High. He was Breaker High. I don't know if actually that was an American show. It was a Canadian show. I'll just side note. Amazing teenage show, at least as a teenager. It was amazing. About a bunch of high school kids that got to go to school on a ship. So Breaker High. Anyways, he was the heartthrob in that. I feel like I want to say A, but then I think that D option's really appealing. So I'm just going to go for D. Just give it. Let's just try D. All of the above.
I don't know if I could do this. Correlates to raining confetti, but that is the right answer. D. Answer. Jamie Foxx plays the piano and had a rapping career, or at least he rapped a couple songs. Kevin Costner, his side gig is country music singer in Modern West. And Ryan Gosling is he's in a band. I think it's called The Used Cars. I probably have that wrong, but.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that about him. Okay,
and,
cool.
Anyway. But wait, I am so proud of you. You did it. And when I think of the prize, I will mail it to you up in
Canada.
So, nice. Well, great. Before we head out, I've had two more questions. One is, well, more of a compliment than anything. I haven't seen a Crow poster since college, yet you have a framed Crow poster. Can you yes. Elaborate on the why that pointed on your wall?
Well, actually, so I'm currently in a condo in Vancouver that is kind of a capsule in time, a time capsule from my partner Colin's early 20s when he first moved to Vancouver, and we spend time in this condo, but it's not really our home, so we haven't updated it since his early to mid 20s. So yeah, we've got the Crow behind me, we have the Fly over there, we have the Terminator beside me, and we have Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's very like young boy filmmaker,
real bachelor pad
vibes in here. Yeah, and then we also have his first movie, Grave Encounters, which is framed over there. But yeah, the Crow, you know, I kind of like having the Crow behind me because Colin has like always envisioned redoing the Crow but with a female as the lead, and maybe that's something that I'm manifesting every time I sit in front of it with it behind me.
Well, last question for you. What is the first album you ever bought, and what is the last album that you bought?
Oh, gosh. I think the first album it was either Michael Jackson or Janet Jackson on cassette, or it was like Take That, which was a cheesy boy band from the 90s.
No, go on. It sounds like you're about to sidestep it. Go on.
Yeah. Actually, and this show that I'm working on right now on Netflix, it takes place in the 90s, and we've been listening to all the, you know, big hits from the 90s. It's really brought me back, and I Take That track came on my excellent taste in music back then. it was those, and I personally do not have a record player yet. I'm deeply embarrassed. I need to be able to play my own vinyls on a record player, and I will soon. So once I get that, I'm sure I will be buying many albums, but you know, I'm just doing the Spotify thing these days. And yeah, I really like Lorde's new album. I think there's, you know, she just has a way of like creating really unique hooks and kind of these seemingly simple tracks. So I've been listening to that, but I've also, what composers have I been listening to recently? I think I've been listening to Mark Corvin's The Witch score recently, Colin Stetson a little bit. I love listening to other composers' work. Maybe I'm a little bit nervous to engage too much with any one composer's work because I don't want to, you know, I try to emulate anyone else, and maybe I'm worried about that, but I do like to, you know, I like to enjoy other people's work, and it's inspiring, and it gives me kind of a good, even if I just kind of check in and listen to a few songs and go, okay, that's the bar, neat, now let me go. That's oftentimes what I'll use it for, is kind of go, holy shit, wow, they're doing that. Okay. I gotta rise to the occasion. Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've taken too much of your time. I respect you as an artist, and I really look forward to hearing more of your work, speaking to you in the future. And for the time being, can you tell everybody where they can find your music, and maybe just recap some of the things you have coming up?
Sure. So you can listen to my music on Spotify. I've got two artist names. If you want to listen to my composing work, check out Brittany Allen, and you can listen to this, my first score, What Keeps You Alive, or another feature called Z. Both are dark, moving, cinematic scores, so check those out. But you can also listen to my pop music under the name Brit on Spotify. I've got a handful of tracks out there, and more to come soon, as I am finishing up an album right now. You can grab a vinyl at Burning Witches Records or Mondo of my pop music, and you know, give it a spin. I think, if you're looking for something dark and emotional to dance to, then that you'll find that. And right now I'm acting in this Netflix show called Grendel, and I'm just about to start on Tattered Hearts, which is a Blumhouse Epics film, with a good pal, Bria Grant, who's directing that. So excited for everything I'm working on to be out in the world, and proud of what's out there thus far.
Well, we're excited to get it. So see it, watch it, spin it four times. And until next time, namaste, everybody. Thank you for your time, Brittany.